This is chapter 27, and this is the story I promised you about Vahid, the wisest of all the Persians. It's a lovely story. I want to tell you just a little bit about Vahid before we begin reading the story. I like to tell this story very much. You see, Vahid was considered one of the wisest men in all of Persia, if not the wisest. And that wasn't our idea or the Baha'i's idea. The king and the prime minister thought that was true, and they chose him to find out if what the Bab said was true. He was so famous that the king, the Shah, sent Vahid to visit the Bab and find out if he really was the expected promised one. And you know what? The king said that whatever Vahid decided, the king would accept. Well, Vahid planned because of his knowledge and his wisdom that, of course, with a few questions, he would overwhelm the Bab with his own knowledge and lead him back as his slave to the capital city and to the king, defeated and humbled. Instead, Vahid found out that the Bab was indeed exactly who he said he was, the promised one. And Vahid believed in him and accepted his truth and began to teach himself every place. In fact, he never went back to the capital city at all. He wrote a report and told the king and the prime minister that the Bab was the promised one and his message the truth. But they refused to believe Vahid. They said he had been enchanted and had fallen under the spell of a sorcerer. Can you imagine? So you see, Vahid was another brave leader who believed the Bab's message and told the people about it every place. And because of his faith, the governor sent soldiers out to fight with Vahid and scatter his friends. When Vahid heard them coming, he told one of his followers to take 6 men and go out to meet them. Well, that seems a very few men, doesn't it, to meet trained soldiers? But you remember Fort Sheikh Tabarsi, and listen to what happened here. Vahid told them to shout 7 times the words, Allahu Akbar. That means God is the most great. And at the 7th time, they were to rush forward and scatter the enemy. And the 7 men had such faith that they seemed suddenly to become much stronger, and they had no trouble in scattering the soldiers. That shows you what a wonderful thing faith can do and will help us if we're under the protection of God. Well, that night, Vahid told those who were with him to go quietly away. His wife with the children were sent to the home of her father so that they might be safe. Then in the middle of the night, Vahid left the city without anyone seeing him. His 2 oldest sons and 2 other companions accompanied him. You know, that was in Yazd. He had a beautiful home in Yazd and also one in Nehriz, and that's where he was going, and that's where he would be martyred. I visited Yazd, and I saw the beautiful door to that house of Vahid in Yazd. He was a very wealthy man. It was a palatial residence with marvelous furniture. And Vahid said that he had built it just so it could be demolished in the path of God. For he said he had found a treasure so priceless that all the possessions of the earth were nothing more than a heap of bones. And he was happy to give up everything, wealth, position, all, and serve the cause of God. It's a wonderful lesson for us there too. So that's what happened there. And then he was on his way to Nehriz. They traveled now, stopping at villages on the way, giving the message wherever they went, telling the people about the Bab and the new day which had dawned. At last they reached Nehriz, and there Vahid gave his message again, and more people came to hear him. Crowds thronged around him because he was so wise and so eloquent. And there were many now that were afraid. They feared that he would take away their position. And so the governor prepared to send soldiers against them. He told those who came with him, Vahid did, that they should go to an old fort not far away. It was a fort called Khaja, and to make it as strong as possible. And later he too came to live in the fort. So in a way it's a story of yet another fort. And sure enough, the governor would not let them live in peace. Again and again his army attacked the fort, where there were only 72 men, 313 at Sheikh Tabarsi, 72 in Fort Khaja. Many of these 72 were either old men or young boys, and yet every time they rushed forth with their cry, Allahu Akbar, they frightened the enemy and scattered them. Of course, that's the same thing that happened in the siege of Tabarsi, wasn't it? And like the leader of the enemy at Tabarsi, the governor at last decided that he just couldn't conquer these people inside the fort in a fair battle, even though it was just a handful of men and boys in the fort. He decided the best way was to trick them. So he sent a message to Vahid, telling him that he and his friends had not understood what Vahid wanted. They thought he wanted to be a great leader in the city. They didn't know he was only teaching religion, they said. It was a lie, of course, but they thought they could fool him. And now they said they knew that Vahid only wanted to give his message. And if he would come out of the fort and come to them, they would make peace and he and his followers could go home free. If he would not do this, they would all be killed. Well, like Khadus at Tabarsi, Vahid knew very well they did not mean it, that they weren't sincere. But he felt that he should take the chance to deliver his message even to the enemy. So he and the few he took with him went to the meeting, and they were well treated there. Their enemies dared do nothing while Vahid's friends were still there. Instead, he took the first letter to the fort. And when they came out of the fort, they were scattered, and most of them were killed. And after that, the governor and his friends were no longer afraid, and they put to death Vahid and those who had come with him. And that's the way another brave man, one of the bravest, died for the cause of God. But he had made many, many friends to carry on his work. And you know, in a book called The Traveler's Narrative, it tells us that of those chiefly responsible for these cruelties to Vahid and his companions, all of them came to a bad end and died overwhelmed with calamity. Well, you can see how many important and wonderful souls accepted the Bab, and Vahid was one of the greatest. He has been called a unique and peerless figure of his age. That means that no one was like Vahid. He was the best. He was also called illustrious, and even the king and prime minister said that Vahid was the wisest of the Persians. And so Vahid laid down his life for the cause of God and for the one he loved, the Bab. And Vahid was martyred only 10 days before the martyrdom of his beloved Bab. Although the story of Hujjat, another one of the great heroes of God, and his martyrdom took place after that of the Bab, I thought I'd tell his story here. So if you'll turn to page 61, we'll tell you his story, and then after that the story of the martyrdom of the Bab. Sort of save that, you know. That was called something unique in the religious history of the world, and I didn't say that. An historian said that, and not a Baha'i. And it's going to be true, as you'll see. But now we're going to tell you about Hujjat. This is chapter 27. He was a wonderful man, brave, afraid of no one, very eloquent, spoke with great authority. It's a story of someone who, like the other heroes of God, was willing to die, if necessary, for the Bab and for his cause. Hujjat lived in Zanjan. He was a very wise man, and the people loved him a great deal. And wherever he went, they flocked to hear him speak. But when Hujjat heard about the Bab and began to give his message to the people, the religious leaders of his city rose up against him. Isn't it strange how they always did this and do this whenever the truth is told? When Hujjat heard about the siege of Fort Sheikh Tabarsi, he longed to go there and help the brave men in the fort. At that time, however, Hujjat was a prisoner in Tehran, and he couldn't go. A short time later, he escaped by disguising himself and went back to his home, Zanjan. Men, women, and children came out to meet him because he was a hero, even before he heard about the words of the Bab. He was such an outstanding person, and they wanted to help him in any way they could. The people of Zanjan were now warned that anyone who listened to Hujjat would be in danger of losing their lives. Well, of course, this didn't frighten most of Hujjat's friends. They decided, however, that they'd take refuge in a nearby fort. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? Like the fort of Sheikh Tabarsi and like the fort of Khaja at Nehriz. So that's what they did. They took refuge in a fort that was called Ali Martin Khan. Three wonderful forts. I hope someday I can write a book about those three forts. So they took refuge there. and whenever the governor's army would attack the fort, a few of those within it would rush out shouting, "Ya Sahib al-Zaman, the Lord of the Age," just like they did at Fort Sheikh Tabarsi. And so fierce did they sound, and so loud did they shout, that the enemy would scatter before them. Even the people in the town trembled with fright at their cry, which sounded to them almost like thunder. Like those other followers of the Bab, however, they would only kill to save the lives of their women and their children and their own lives. They would never attack first. Trouble came in the fort, however, because soon they were without enough food to eat, like they were at Fort Sheikh Tabarsi. And all they could get came from a few women who were able to reach the fort, and they had to pay a great deal of money for the food. At this time, a young girl from the village nearby wished to help them, so she disguised herself as a man, and taking a gun, a sword, and a shield, she rushed forth to fight with the other soldiers. No one knew she was a girl, and she was so brave that she made the others feel braver. And again they drove back with great force those who came against them. At last, Hujat, who was watching from the fort, recognized her. He knew who she was, and he sent out for her to come back. She burst into tears and begged Hujat not to tell anyone that she was a girl, but to let her go back and help her companions, and she was so persuasive that finally he let her go. For 5 months this young girl fought with the others and encouraged them. She slept with her head on her sword and shield. She wanted most of all to die for the cause of God. And at last, one day, she had her wish, for she was shot while helping to drive back the enemy. And after her death, 20 women became followers of the Bab because of her. Her name was Zainab, and she was only a young girl of 17, a real heroine of the cause of God. Once Hujat wrote to the Shah for help, but the letter never reached the king. The messenger was captured and put to death, and the message of Hujat was destroyed, and another message put in its place, which told the Shah many falsehoods about those brave people in the fort of Ali Mardan Khan in Zanjan. The women in the fort helped by baking bread, taking care of the wounded, and by cheering on and encouraging the soldiers, and even the children were eager to help. At last the governor decided to trick them, just as they had tricked the others in the fort of Sheikh Tabarsi and the fort of Khaja. Hujat sent a few to meet with the governor, but they were either killed or taken prisoner. Only one, a child of 9 years, escaped and reached the fort to tell them what had happened. At last one day, Hujat himself was struck in the arm by a bullet, and seeing that he was wounded, the others laid down their guns and rushed to help him. And it was then that the enemy was able to make a breach and enter the fort. 100 women and children were captured, and later many of them died exposed to the cold. The men who were not taken prisoner still fought on bravely, but every day many were slain. And at last, one day, while he was praying to the Bab, Hujat himself died from his wounds. And so once again the enemy thought they had killed the cause of God. But many more believed in his message because of those who had died so bravely. Hujat and his companions had taken part in one of the most violent upheavals of all. The Bab, on his way to prison, when he had gone earlier to the north, had passed through that city, Zanjan, and he foretold the coming disaster. He said that town would be thrown into a tumult and great suffering would take place. But because of the love of the heroes of God for the Promised One, and because of their heroisms, it is not surprising that the Bab called Zanjan that exalted spot. While our hearts are saddened by the sorrows of these lovers of God and the cruelty of their enemies, we know that just as it had been with the heroes and heroines and the martyrs of other faiths like the early Christians, it was this very sacrifice that raised up the teachings of Christ and now raised up the teachings of the Bab and Baha'u'llah. And that's worth making a sacrifice for, isn't it? I mean, what we need today are not people who give their lives, but people who give their time and their energies and their resources. Teaching martyrs, the beloved guardian Shoghi Effendi described them. And that's how we can grow up and follow in the footsteps of these dawnbreakers and become great teaching martyrs. Isn't that exciting? Because we're never too young to learn. And now we have come at last to the dramatic story we have all been waiting for. The Martyrdom of the Bob, Chapter 28. You know, of course, what the word martyrdom means. It means to die for the cause of God. Those who are put to death because they are trying to teach about God and what He wishes are called martyrs. Of course, all these people we've been hearing about were martyrs. They died trying to tell people that a new divine teacher, the Bob, the Promised One, had come to the earth. The early believers of every religion gave their lives so that their faith could grow and prosper. Perhaps you might think that after so many had been killed, people were afraid to listen and say that they believed. But that was not the case with most of them. When they saw that so many people were glad to die for this cause, they felt that it must be true if people would make such a sacrifice. And always more and more became followers of the Bob. And no one had been able to harm him. Everywhere he went, most of the people loved him and were ready to die for him. And now the Grand Vizier, the leading minister, was one who hated the Bob. He was the man who was nearest to the Shah and helped him decide what to do. Of course, this was a very important position, and he didn't understand what the Bob's message was about, or he never would have acted that way. And he didn't want the Bob to talk with the king for fear that he too might come to believe this new message. The Grand Vizier feared that if this happened, he might lose his position. So he decided that the time had come that in some way the Bob must be put to death. He thought that then the Bob's followers would certainly be afraid to go on ahead without him and teach this faith, and that it would die out and vanish from the face of the earth. So he sent a soldier to the Bob's prison. This soldier was ordered to bring the Bob to Tabriz. The Bob knew what was happening, even though he was a prisoner far off. 40 days before the messenger came, the Bob collected all of his writings, and with them he put his pen case, his seals, and agate rings, and he sent them by one of the letters of the living to Ahmad, one of his amanuenses. Amanuensis means secretary. And he urged the messenger to take the greatest care of them and to tell no one about them except Ahmad. When the things were given to Ahmad, he found that among them was a letter from the Bob. And in this letter, the Bob said that these precious things were to be taken to whom, do you think? To Baha'u'llah. Right. And so Ahmad set out at once for the city of Tehran, where Baha'u'llah lived. And there he gave these precious things of the Bab to Baha'u'llah. 3 days after the Bab was taken to Tabriz, an order came from the Grand Vizier saying that the Bab was to be put to death on that very day in the courtyard of the barracks, or the place where the soldiers stayed. And anyone who said they were followers of the Bob was also to be put to death. Now the man in whose house the Bob was staying refused to have anything to do with this wicked order. And so another order came that the Bob and his secretary were to be taken to one of the rooms in the barracks. 10 men were to guard the door of his room. There was a great turmoil in the streets as the Bob and Hussein, his secretary, were led through the street. And when they came near the barracks, a young man suddenly forced his way through the crowd and flung himself at the feet of the Bob. "Send me not from thee, O master," he begged. "Wherever thou goest, suffer me to follow thee." "Muhammad Ali," answered the Bob, "arise and rest assured that you will be with me. Tomorrow you will witness what God has decreed." Of course, you remember Muhammad Ali, right? The young 18-year-old boy who had dreamed that the Bob would come and that he would someday be able to accept martyrdom with him. And now that promise had been fulfilled. Isn't it interesting to see how similar the words of the Bob to Muhammad Ali were to the words spoken by Christ to the young man who was crucified beside him, who believed? And Jesus said, "This day thou shalt be with me in paradise." And the Bob said to Muhammad Ali, "This day you will see what God has promised." Two others also rushed up to the Bob, and they were placed in the same cell or room with the Bob and his secretary, Hussein. They say that that night the Bob's face shone with gladness as he approached his martyrdom and as he talked to his companions. The next day, as the Bob was speaking to his secretary, they were interrupted by one of the officers of the barracks who had come to take the Bob away. "Not until I have said to him all the things I wish to say," the Bob warned the man, "can any earthly power silence me. Though all the world be armed against me, yet shall they be powerless to deter me from fulfilling to the last word my intention." Well, the officer was astonished at such words. He said nothing, however, except he ordered the Bob to follow him, leaving the conversation with his secretary, Hussein, unfinished. That same morning, the young man, Muhammad Ali, was told that if he would turn against the Bob and listen to him no longer, his life still could be spared. "Never," he exclaimed, "in him I have found my paradise." And so he was delivered into the hands of Sam Khan, who had charge of the regiment that was to fire upon the Bob. And that was a wonderful story, too, you know. Sam Khan, an Armenian Christian, in charge of the regiment, he was finding it harder and harder to carry out his orders. The more he found out about the Bob, the more difficult it was for him to go forward with his orders. He went to the Bob finally and he said, "I'm a Christian and I bear you no ill will. I don't want to do you any harm." And he asked the Bob to free him from the necessity of having to take the Bob's life. The Bob said, "Follow your instructions, and if your intention be sincere, surely the Almighty will be able to relieve you from your perplexity." The hour came at last. A nail was driven into the wall of the barracks, and from this nail the Bob and his companion were to be suspended. The young boy, Muhammad Ali, asked that he be placed so that his body would shield that of the Bob. And he was suspended in such a way that his head rested against the breast of the Bob. 750 soldiers were lined up, and finally they fired upon the two. When the command came to fire, the smoke from the firing of those 750 old-style muskets shut out the light of the sun and turned the day momentarily into darkness. Many people were crowded on the rooftops of the buildings to watch, thousands, and when the cloud of smoke cleared away, they could hardly believe their eyes. Muhammad Ali, the young boy, stood before them, alive and not in the least hurt. And the cords by which the two had been suspended had been cut, and the Bob himself had vanished. You can imagine what excitement that caused. The soldiers began to hunt for him wildly, and other soldiers showed the cords to the crowd and said, "The cords were severed. It wasn't a miracle." But an historian said it was a real miracle. At last they found the Bob in the room in which he had spent the night. He was finishing his conversation with his secretary, Hussein. Remember the conversation that had been interrupted that morning, and when he had said that no power on earth could stop him from fulfilling to the last wish his intention? Well, the Bob, when he saw the soldiers, turned to them and said, "I have now finished my conversation with Sayyid Hussein. You may proceed to fulfill your intention." But that attendant remembered the Bob's words, what he'd said that morning, and he was just overwhelmed by it. He said no, he would have nothing to do with the execution of the Bob, and he left the scene and resigned his position. And now the regiment, Sam Khan, they'd fired 750 musket balls at the Bob and his companion, and they'd been freed without a scratch. And he was stunned by what had taken place and by what had happened.
and he thought God had relieved him of his perplexity. He had carried out his duty, and the Bob had been freed, and he wouldn't let that happen again. He ordered his men to march out of the barrack square. And Sam Conn said that he would have nothing to do with the killing of the Bob, even if it cost him his own life. And so finally, another regiment was brought up, and the Bob and his companion were again suspended, and this time the wicked command was carried out, and the Bob and his companion were both slain. And the very moment the shots were fired, a great storm swept over the city. A whirlwind of dust shut out the light of the sun and blinded the eyes of the people who were watching. The entire city was in darkness from noon until night. But even after all this had happened, the people still didn't realize what a terrible thing they had done and who it was they had killed in the streets of Tabriz. The wickedness of the people brought great trouble to that part of the country. Many who had watched and who had not tried to save the Bob lost their lives shortly after, lost their money, lost their possessions. Terrible things happened. And the regiment which had fired upon the Bob, they too were made to suffer. Some were killed in an earthquake. Others, while resting under the shade of a wall, were killed by the falling of the wall. And the rest were shot because of something they had done. They had mutinied. And a strange thing, not only one volley was fired, but a second volley to make sure they were slain, just as had happened to the Bob. And so, with the death of the Bob, his enemies felt surely that now his cause would die and it would be heard of no more. But you will see how very mistaken they were. Nothing can kill the cause of God, the cause for which the Bob had died, because that was not God's wish. The Bob, you see, was only the dawn, and Baha'u'llah, the sun, would soon arise. And so, just as Jesus had died on the cross so that men might be called back to God, so did the precious Bob breathe his last against a barracks wall in the sun-drenched city of Tabriz at high noon, July 9th, 1850, a day commemorated and honored in nearly 100,000 places around the world today, and that's only the beginning. The whole world will be part of this great Christ-promised kingdom of God on earth, this day of the one fold and the one shepherd. And all of us are going to make sure that that happens, aren't we? And aren't we lucky to be part of this wonderful faith, this Baha'i faith, which stands for love and for justice and for kindness to all people, kindness to animals, kindness to man, kindness to all the creatures of God. For love is the secret. And the world needs that, doesn't it? And the sooner, the better.